Ron Ananian.
I think there's a lot of ways to do it right. I just think some ways are more right than others.
The Car Doctor.
You know, I hope you got tenacity, young man. And you got some gumption because you're going to pull the dashboard out to do this.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your call at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. 855-560-9900. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, at your service. Pick up the phone, give us a call. Let's talk about your car problem, whatever it is. We've got some great things going on this hour. We'll be giving away a Wix diecast car. We've been talking about it a little bit today, but we're going to be giving away a Wix diecast giveaway. It is a 39 Ford Coupe diecast car. Tony wanted it last hour. He thought it might help him get dates tonight, but I said, no. It's got to go to one of the listeners. So Tony and Tom are the judges today, so you can call in, and it's up to them. They will be giving that away this hour for sure. And also, I am here, like I said, to take your calls at 855-560-9900, podcasting at cardoctorshow.com. Tune in iHeart, iTunes, also there. Click subscribe. Do the thing. You know what to do. And let's talk about your car, and let's get down into it. I want to talk to you first about talking more effectively to your mechanic, because I think that's a problem for a great many of you. And, you know, it's an issue. It's easier for me in the shop because when I stand at the counter and I talk to people, I can tell when their eyes are glazing over. I've kind of gone over the line and, you know, it's too technical. So I'm trying to keep this one simple. I had two vehicles this week, a 2010 Ford F-150 truck and a 2013 Jeep Wrangler. Both of them had rather unique, well, not so much unique, but pretty classic examples of what can go wrong and how to diagnose. You know, you got to understand, when I approach a diagnosis, everybody says, Ron, how do you diagnose so many things? And, you know, how do you do it so well? It's not that I'm good at it. I'm consistent. I try to do the same things every time. I tweak it a little bit depending upon what I'm working on and what the situation is, but you know, I still do the same 8 or 9 or 10 steps. I still look at all data. I'll still look at Identifix. I'll still look at Mitchell. I'll still look at IATN. I still look at all my research and my sources. You know, I probably spend 30 to 45 minutes of each diagnostic hour or that first diagnostic hour research. You know, duplicate. Can I duplicate the problem? Strange things. What do I observe? What do I see in the vehicle? Can I create the problem, or is it an intermittent? Ugly word. Can I find any information on it? And I try not to dig too deep, just what's out there. I just want to get a sense of maybe where to look if it's a hardcore problem. But something that I don't see a lot of shops doing yet is they're not scanning. They're looking at the car and they're going, hey, the wipers don't work on this 2013 Jeep. You know, Big Bob down the street had a problem with one of those about 2 years ago, and it was the wiper motor, so they must all need wiper motors, so let's put a wiper motor in it. Or, you know, my cousin Fred down in North Carolina had a problem with one of those, and it was the multifunction switch, and all those multifunction switches go bad. Let's put a switch in it. That's not diagnosing. That's throwing parts. And the point becomes, how do you diagnose today? Well, and in a lot of cases, yeah, it's with a voltmeter and duplicating the condition and looking at wiring diagrams and so forth. But I still think now more than ever, all good diagnoses at some point, steps 1 through 5, somewhere in those first 5 moves, is with a scan tool. And I think that's what you've got to start to listen for. What is your mechanic saying to you? Well, Mrs. Smith, I diagnosed your air conditioning problem in your 2010 Ford F-150 because that was the problem with the other vehicle. It had an air conditioning problem. You know, somewhere along the way, you want to hear somebody say, well, I took out a scan tool. There are no fault codes. Or, as in the case of this 2010 Ford, here's a car that wasn't blowing cold air. It was cool air on the right, warmer air on the left. And there are documented cases where a low system charge, low refrigerant, can cause a vehicle to do that today for reasons regarding evaporator size and how big the evaporator or the piece under the dashboard is. Nobody's eyes are glossing over, are they? And there are cases where it's electrical. You've got to start with a scan tool diagnosis. In the case of the Ford F-150, it produced two fault codes, a B1081 and a 1086. Oh, God, he's shouting numbers again. No, they all mean something. The 1081 was a problem with the blend door actuator or the motor that moves the left side cold control. And the 1086 was a problem with what they call a central air door motor, which is a device that controls air door position, which affects temperature control. Now, in either case, the dashboard has to come out. Oh, boy. So there's some further detailed diagnosis that's required for that that will ensure, is it wiring? Is it component failure? Is it a stuck door? So there are some steps to go, and we didn't finish it yet, so I can't tell you what fixed that vehicle. My suspicion is, because I'm going to be like everybody else and say, my suspicion is it's a blend door actuator, but I'm basing that on the fact that I can change it, but it doesn't go full sweep, which is what I read on a scan tool. See, scan tool comes back into that, and that's part of the diagnosis. In the case of the Jeep, it was a wiper motor. But here's the interesting part. The wiper motor produced two fault codes, a 2304 and a 2305. Problems with the park switch. You know when you put the wipers in park, when you go to shut them off, they park? Well, there was a problem with the park switch. First, it reported that the park switch was stuck in the high position. Then it reported that the park switch was stuck in a low position. You know, how do you attack it? I went through a wiring diagram. I sat down and I looked for signals because there's also a module involved here, totally integrated power module, or TIPM as we call it. And I had to verify that the TIPM was okay. See, everything's module driven now too. It's not just componentry. Long and the short of it was, and the point of all this, when you go into a repair shop, you gotta hope that, you know, since 2005, 2006 model year, you gotta hope that they're saying that if it's not a check engine light issue, that they're saying to you, hey, I pulled out a scan tool and I scanned it for codes. I think a repair shop that doesn't do that in this day and age, I won't say they're doing it wrong, but they're not necessarily doing it right. And the time is now. I used to say the time is coming 5 years ago, but the time is now where part of every diagnosis, part of a service, okay, and this is what I really want to stress. You go in for a 30,000 mile or a 60,000 mile or a 90,000 mile service, some major service interval, I think the repair shop has to scan that vehicle for fault codes. Listen, other than, you know, what if it was winter? Okay. What if it was winter in the case of the Ford truck and they weren't using the air conditioning and the heat's working okay? Because the heat would have worked in that vehicle. It just didn't have great air conditioning. And you went in for a service, and 4 months later, 5 months later, there was a problem with blend door actuators or any some such thing. Or you're taking it out on the road, and you're traveling from Minnesota in the winter down to Florida on family vacation, and you get to Florida, and you find out the air conditioning doesn't work. I think that a good repair shop, it's 15, 20 minutes of time in most cases to do a system scan and look at all fault codes in the vehicle. Got to remember, not all fault codes turn on dash lights. And that's the point here, that in the case of this Jeep and this Ford, there were no dash lights on for those problems. They were symptom component related, and those were the failures. You've got to start doing more scanning. It's just very, very important as a part of the process in order to diagnose the car. Because had you not, I would have gone off in the wrong direction. Scanning a car for non-check engine lights is now part of the automotive landscape. At least it is in my shop. It should be with your mechanic, too. 855-560-9900. Let's pull over and take a pause, and then we'll kick the garage doors wide open this hour and run full throttle. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Thanks for sticking around this hour. 855-560-9900. Get out to cardoctorshow.com. Podcast there. Tune in iHeart, iTunes. Click subscribe. You know the drill. Let's get over the phones. Let's go over and talk to George in New Gloucester, 03 Chevy Silverado, and some misfire problems. George, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Well, I had this same issue last fall, and it would come and go. And I got a 3111 Pro scan tool.
Okay.
And it came up with a number of choices on the misfire. And anyway, one day I was talking to my wife. She said, "You checked the filters?" And I said, "No." So I changed the gas filter, and I believe now it's coincidence, the misfire went away. And it came back last week. So I said, "Well, I'll do the same thing." So I changed the gas filter, but there was no change. The problem codes listed were so great, I was trying to look for a way to narrow it down.
Let me ask you this, George. If you if you clear the fault codes, you're saying multiple codes come back all at once?
No, just that one code, P300.
Oh, okay. So you've got, so you're working on a P0300 here.
Yes.
Does the engine run well?
No.
It's got a miss to it.
Right. It will start up and idle great for probably 35 seconds to a minute or so, and then you can hear it start skipping.
Okay. Does your scan tool show data stream?
You'll have to tell me. You know the scan tools better than I do. I didn't get to that.
Okay, because basically what you want to do is you want to look to see, hopefully your scan tool will show data stream. The 3111, I'm trying to remember. It's been so long. But basically, you want to go into data stream and see if it has any misfire data. You know, you want to look to see which cylinders are missing, because the fact that you've got a miss is a good thing in a way, because at least we know what cylinders to pay attention to.
Right.
So you know, until you can tell me what cylinders are misfiring, rather than give you specific instructions, I want to give you some general thoughts, if that's okay. All right.
Sure.
An engine can miss for multiple reasons, all right? And when it says misfire, it doesn't necessarily mean ignition. You know, we're all creatures of habit, okay? You know, we all know that, you know, this is what went bad on my brother-in-law's car, so I'll change those same three parts, and that'll fix mine. You know, and that doesn't always work. That's like, you know, what I've learned is, one of the things I've learned is, as I've gotten older and a little bigger, I don't fit under dashboards as easily as I once did, you know, and that's just a sign of being an older mechanic. You just kind of learn that lesson. So that being said, if it's got a physical miss or a skip, as you say, you know, it could be ignition, it could be fuel, it could be mechanical. I generally don't think it's mechanical from your description, because mechanical misses don't really come and go. I've seen it in rare cases with valve springs and some crazy things that I've seen there, but generally it's not an intermittent fault that comes and goes. So that being said, you know, our focus now has to be on either fuel or ignition. All right? And you know, if it's cylinder 6, for example, you know, what I'm probably going to do is pull the plug on 6. Yeah, just for giggles, I might stick a compression gauge in the hole and pop compression on the truck all the way around. How many miles are on this?
About 137,000.
Yeah, it's still young.
Right.
You know, but I'd want to look to see, you know, where's compression on all 8. It couldn't hurt. Sometimes it's a little hard to get to. Maybe I won't hurt myself trying to do it that way. Maybe I will. But, you know, what does the plug look like? Is the plug tan? Is the plug white? Is the plug black? You know, showing me, I'm looking at cylinder temperature. I'm looking at an indication of that, and that'll tell me a lot about that hole. You know, is this a, this is, should be coils mounted on the valve cover, short wires going down to the plug?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, you know, do I want to move the coil from 6 over to 1, or, you know, and move the plug from 6 to 5 and start moving things around and see which way does the misfire go? If the misfire stays with the cylinder, back to 6, then maybe I've got an injector issue, okay? Maybe I've got something mechanical. But it's just, you know, you want to try to isolate and narrow down working with what you have. You don't have a lot of tools.
Right.
So, you know, we want to, you know, try and nip it in the bud that way. Now, just to show you an example of how misfires, P0300 is a headache for all mechanics. I've seen grown mechanics get really upset over a P0300 because it's a process. It's a step-by-step. You know, I have seen serpentine belt tensioners. You know the serp belt on the front of the engine?
Yeah.
I've seen a weak serpentine belt create a P0300. Because, well, and I don't think it's in your case because the engine's physically running rough. But, you know, on an intermittent P0300, sure, you go out there, you put your foot through the headlight, you stand on it hard, the engine goes up in RPM, and that belt all of a sudden starts to, that tensioner isn't as strong as it once was, and it winds up and releases. It takes the tension off that serp belt. What do you think the crank's going to do at 5,000 RPM if all of a sudden it's not dragging the weight of the AC compressor, the power, the water pump, and the power steering at the same time, right? All of a sudden that crank is going to, it's going to flare or have a variation in RPM, which is what a misfire is determined by in the computer. It sees that variation in crank speed and says, uh-oh, something's going on here with George's engine. Let me turn on the check engine light. I don't think, I'm just trying to show you the variables that I don't think that's your case. I think you get some scan tool data up, you start to look at a misfire, you're going to see a hard failure. You'll know which cylinder to go after.
Okay.
All right, sir.
Now, I have a question on a scan tool.
Right.
Okay. I work on family cars, I'm diagnosed and so forth.
Okay.
Goes from an 03 Toyota and Silverado to a 16 Escape. Okay, and what I was looking for, I've heard you advertise, I think, the launch tool for around $1,500.
Right.
Okay, it wouldn't bother me to spend the money to get a good scan tool if you think it would be beneficial.
You know, it's not that I don't think you should. What I would do, if I were looking for a scan tool and I wasn't in the business anymore, I would be looking around to see what's it. First of all, I take a look on eBay, all right?
Yep.
Because from my seat here, all the scan tools I own today, I'm probably going to throw out in the next 3 years. And that's just sad. And I'm going to have to do that because of technology. But because of that, shops like me, they're going to be getting rid of scan tools guys like you on eBay can buy.
Okay.
So if there are shops out there, you know, getting rid of older scan tools that were once, you know, the $3,000 and the $4,000 and the $5,000 tools, and maybe they're selling them for $1,000, $1,500, it's older technology, but what do you care?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it works on your car, you don't need it to go forward into a 19, 20, or 21 model year vehicle. So there's nothing wrong with that. As far as the launch, I like the Launch X431 Pro. I use it all the time. Mm-hmm. And actually, we never advertise it. You just hear me talk about it. when I tell you guys about the launch, I'm just telling it to you because I actually use it. I think it's a great tool. I would look at Launch. If I can find an older Snap-on, I would do that. And, you know, I might even try to find myself an OTC Genesis. But I think they're getting older now and harder to find parts for, so I'd probably stay away from it. Yeah, I think you're right, George. I think Launch is probably where I would be in your price point, and that's probably not a bad idea. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. George, I appreciate the call. I'll be back right after this. Boy, oh boy, oh boy, it's my turn to start speaking. 855-560-9900. Tom Ray just told me about the calls coming up. This is going to be a great segment. Let's get into it. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, and see what's going on here. Tim in Flint, Michigan.
Yes, sir.
Tim, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How are you?
Thank you. Big fan.
Gee, you've kind of got some headaches here. What do you got, an 07 Impala, an 05 Sierra? And an 08 Silverado, and you've got a big question. Is it, why'd you buy American?
Well,
no, I'm only kidding.
hey, I'm almost at that point, but that's a different time.
Yeah.
Hey, first of all, can I put my name in for the Wix car? I'm very interested in that.
Tom's giving me, he's wavering, so it depends on how this conversation goes. So let's see how that works out. So,
okay, what I have, an 07 Impala. About 103 on it. 05 Sierra, which is stepson's truck, 130. And 08 Silverado, about 130. And they're all, I maintain them. I'm pretty particular on things and keep them up. Wife calls me, so we work, my check engine light comes on. okay, I'll check it out. And I checked it out, and the first thing you think of is gas cap. I put a new gas cap on it, and the check engine light went off. So we're good, I'm thinking. A week later, she calls me again, check engine light's back on. Okay, I was glad it plugged in this weekend. Okay. Stetson calls me, and half hour later, my check engine light's on. You got to be kidding me. Guess what? On the way home from work, my check engine light comes on in my truck. Now, all I can go back to is we go to the same gas station. There's three on the corner where I live, but I choose the one that's not the lowest price, but the cleanest.
Right.
I like it because I feel they keep the gas station clean and all the surroundings clean. And maybe they're more, respectable company as far as getting good gas and whatnot.
So you're like me. Let me make a prediction. You probably go not only to the same gas station. I bet you pull up to the same pump.
Yeah, yes, I do.
I found my brother from another mother. Look at this, a missing relative. Yeah, you think like I do. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, I guess I'm reading and looking into things. I'm going to start with Impala. I got my hands on that. And clean the mass airflow sensor would be the next step. I mean, I want to go have it plugged in.
Well,
too.
Yeah, let's, what codes do we have on these cars? We know?
I don't know yet.
Okay. So let me ask you this question. Any time in the past 5 years, did you ever have a check engine light come on a car?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, I had a Geo Prism, and I had it plugged in, and he said it was a misfire, and he erased it and went on my way and never had a problem again with it.
Right.
So I guess that was, I'm assuming gas or water, a little bit in the fuel.
Well, and my point is, if we're going to start to repair cars based on the maybes and the what ifs, you know what I'm going to tell you, dude. You gotta scan. You're at the end of the diagnosis. You haven't even started yet.
Right.
All right? You got to feel the pain a little bit.
But I guess the big thing is, I realize they're older cars with miles and whatnot, but the same day, three in my driveway, the lights come on.
Well, I can tell you what that means.
Okay.
It's not your weekend to play the Michigan lottery, all right? Because you would just be wasting your money. However, okay, it is your weekend because Tom just gave me the thumbs up. We are going to give you the Wix diecast car because we feel.
Oh,
thank
you.
You know why
that's great? Because today's my birthday.
There you go. Happy birthday. You know what? And maybe that'll change your look. But I will give you this too. You've got my email, ron@cardoctorshow.com.
Yes.
If you're stuck during the week when you finally scan these cars and you figure out what these fault codes are, you send me those code reports and I'll give you a direction. If not, your duty is to call us back next week and tell us what the codes were, and then we'll give you a direction on how to fix them. How's that?
Okay.
All right.
I can use this email right off Facebook, right?
Right. You can use the email right off Facebook. I think up there is ron@cardoctorshow.com. And
yes.
Don't be surprised. I will answer that. I will try to answer it. You might get an email reply at 3 in the morning because I've been known to sit up at night and answer emails from the listeners around the world. But, that's just trying to help people, man. That's all what it's about.
But
we'll do that. Stay on the line. Tom wants to get your information. And, we'll get that Wix Diecast 39 Ford coming out to you. And enjoy it. And happy birthday. Let's go over and talk to David, Missouri, 2000 Monte Carlo. David.
Yes, how are you?
Good, sir. How can I help you, sir?
How much time we got?
We got as much time as you need or until the end of the hour. What's going on?
Okay. Well, I've got a wife that likes to go out and buy a car every time the key ignition goes bad.
Right.
Or she has a flat tire.
Right.
I got a whole backyard full of cars now. But I do have the last one that went up. Was a 2007, it's a 2000 Monte Carlo, trying to keep track of them.
Right.
But anyway, we were driving down the highway about 65 miles an hour, and I passed a car, and we had just gotten this car fixed about 2 weeks earlier with a intake gasket that blew out.
I suppose that's
common.
Yeah, that was common.
Okay, anyway, he cleaned it out, and he said, don't smoke a little bit because there's water in it. And I thought, oh, boy, I really got a winner here. And so anyway, we drove it for about 2 weeks, and then when I was passing this car, it made a funny sound. It sounded like kind of a pop, and I was right next to the car while I was passing, so I managed to get in front of it and get off the highway. And she said she heard a little kind of rattle, tinkle thing when I accelerated. To get around the car.
Okay.
And then it kind of popped. And then Anyway, pulled it over, and it cost $900 to get it back home, tow fee. And I thought, well, I'm not going to let this thing ruin my day, so I'm going to call you and say, I've got to get it fixed so I can at least get $200 or $300 out of the car if I sell it.
So let me ask you this. The car died on the road. It's towed back home. Has anybody looked at it yet?
Yeah, I had a mechanic one day says he can't get it started. Well, I said, look, you might try putting gas in it, you know, because he cranked it over.
Well,
it did crank. It tried to start, and then it quit start. It wouldn't run. So he took him in the shop. I guess he looked at it a little bit. He charged $300 to look at it and just push it in and push it out. And he said he tried to start it, put gas in it, and all this stuff. And he said it runs for a few minutes, but he didn't know what was wrong with it, and he couldn't figure it out. So he parked it behind the shop, and there it sits.
There's so much wrong with this question. I almost we may need the rest of this hour. So, you know, dude, you paid $300. Now, I'm not picking on Missouri. But, you know, listen, I work in North Jersey. North Jersey is like Beverly Hills. We have the most expensive labor rates in the country, I think.
Yeah.
For $300, what's it, you know, it's for $300, we probably would have had the car not only diagnosed, but probably halfway to being fixed. I shouldn't say that, but holy cow. You know, we don't
Ronnie charged me $700 for the intake. Okay, and then when I looked back and he just looked at it and said he couldn't get started, it was another $300, so I got $1,000 in that car. And I should have a motor in it by that time.
All right, let me ask you something, David. You ever work on a lawnmower?
Yeah,
okay. So, you know, when the lawnmower didn't start, how did you diagnose it?
Well, I said, I need to take this to Ron, the car doctor, and have him put a, you know, check the computer out and find out whether it could be maybe the ignition. You know, there's something wrong with the ignition. It's got gas. You know, it runs for a few minutes and then
Here's my point. Diagnosis is all begin in the beginning. So here's a car that runs for a few minutes and dies. First thing we're going to do is let's screw a fuel pressure gauge on it. Does the car have fuel pressure? You know, here's a classic example from description. It sounds like this guy's trying to figure out what's wrong, and in the process, because he can't right away, he's not going to stop and look to see what's right. So here's a case where I want to know what's right. I want to know I've got good fuel pressure. I want to do a fuel pump sample and volume test to see that there's clean fuel in the tank, and it fills a Snapple bottle, which is about a pint in 25 to 30 seconds. The Snapple people love me. I've been talking about their bottles for 26 years on radio. So once I do that, once I've got good fuel pressure, good volume, and a clean fuel sample out of the car, done. I move on to something else. Then I want to know, do I have spark? For less than $50, I can go down to the local O'Reilly Auto Parts and buy a spark tester, hook it up to a plug wire, and does it have spark? Does it continue to make spark? Yes, no, good, bad, next. And then I want to go and take a look at, can I listen through the end of a screwdriver, tap into an injector? I think I can still get to an injector fairly easy on a 2000 Monte Carlo to listen to it. Do I hear the injector going click, 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 click? I just diagnosed 2/3 of the car, and I did that in 3 minutes on radio. You know.
Exactly. And I'm saying that, you know, you first have to have an IQ, you know, probably over 10 or 12, something like that, you know, in order to just use your common sense. You know what I'm saying? The guy's been in business for like 25 years or 30 years.
David, I understand completely why my industry has such a bad reputation, and I understand why the shop is 2.5-3 weeks backed up all the time. So here's the deal, all right? Those three things are important. I would check them. I'd get a scan tool, plug in a scan tool. Does the scan tool communicate with the engine controller? That's step one. If it does, that tells me the engine controller's awake. Step two, can I read any data on it? Can I see cranking RPM? Can I see injector pulse width? What am I missing? What I was trying to make the point before was, with regard to working on the lawnmower, is, you know, when you work on a lawnmower, you look for spark, you look for fuel, you look for mechanical, you know, integrity. It's the same thing with an engine, except now you got to add the electrical side of it and computers. Get those things done. Give me a call back, and we'll take it from there. And if you need more help, send me an email, ron@cardoctorshow.com. Dude, you got to find another mechanic. That guy's bad. Something wrong there. That doesn't make any sense. Tell him I said put the wrench down and step away from the car, and he should give you your money back. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Danny, the Car Doctor. Let's get over and talk to David in Chicago. 05 Buick Rendezvous. David, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, I got a 2005 Buick Rendezvous 3.4 with like 145,000 miles on it. And okay. Randomly, within the last 3 months, 3 or 4 months, it will just die when you come into a stop. Okay. It starts right back up.
At random, no warning sign, you never know when it's going to happen type of thing.
No, and it happens so smoothly. Like, you're stopping, and the only way you know it dies is the battery light comes on.
Okay.
It's not running out of fuel or anything. It's something like that.
So, a couple of basics, just to cover the bases. You know, when I'm faced with this situation, here I am again. I've got to know what's good. I've got to know what's bad. I want to make sure maintenance is up to date. One of the things I always stop to consider on a stall on any vehicle is cleanliness of the throttle plate. All right. I want to make
sure. I actually cleaned that a while ago, like
good.
Within the last 3 or 4 months. Yeah.
Good. So the throttle plate's clean. I also want to make sure, and this is going to sound strange, I also want to make sure the battery terminals are clean and tight. I have seen some strange things, particularly, now I'm going to tell you exact GM, particularly out of GM, older GM vehicles, dirty terminals, dirty side terminals, loose side terminals have caused some really funky problems to occur on older GM vehicles. So just, you know, humor the old mechanic. Just take a look at them.
Yeah.
Make sure they're good, clean, and tight. What's sort of common on an intermittent problem like this is two things come to mind. Do you think it's when the car is running hot, or is it more likely to happen hot versus cold starting out first thing in the morning?
Yes, it's usually when we've been driving for a while, like maybe 3 hours or so.
Okay, perfect. And will it restart right away?
Right away, yep.
Right away. So, you know, if it didn't restart right away, and even if it does restart right away, I would stop to consider an ignition module as a possible fault. Kind of tough to prove out on the road. Usually the ignition module fault is one where the module got overheated and it won't restart right away, and there's some testing you'll end up doing in the bay. If we're dealing with an intermittent, you know, on the road type of a thing, and it restarts right away, take a look at, you know where the AC accumulator is, the big silver can?
Yeah.
Take a look at the wiring harness as it wraps around the accumulator. The harness for the ignition module goes through that loom, and they're known to, they rub up against the accumulator, and every once in a while, and it's like turning the key off. Take a look at that wiring harness very carefully. If that doesn't do it for you, give me a call back. We'll talk again.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You take good care. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the name of the Car Doctor, 855-560-9900. 24/7 Car Doctor phone number. If you're listening on podcast, or you're listening on the stream, or you're listening for an affiliate that takes it on delay, call 855-560-9900. Just like Stephanie from Sugar Hill, New Hampshire is about to, and we can talk to you about your car problem. Stephanie, welcome to the Car Doctor.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good morning, or afternoon, actually.
Yeah, it's one or the other. It's always got to be one or the other. Well, actually, it could be good evening, too, so you got a choice of three. So, but what's going on? How can I help?
I have a 1999 Acura, and the driver's side door doesn't want to open. It doesn't appear to be mechanically jammed. There is some type of electrical issue. And a local mechanic, who's a really great guy, got in there, didn't take out the car seat and pull the whole panel off, but he kind of tilted the panel out and looked in it. And he wasn't able to figure out what the electrical problem was.
Well,
ever hear of anything like this in Acura?
Yeah, once in a while, the actuators, the latch mechanisms stick. Or it's this, if it's what I think it is, it's this really cheesy solenoid built into the latch assembly that is stuck. And, you know, there's one of two ways I've seen it resolved. If it's what I'm thinking of, if you really think it's electrical that's holding it on, something's being applied, what would happen if you disconnected the battery? That would kill it electrically, and it might release it mechanically. That's number one. Number two, mechanical guys, I shouldn't say this, but I think I have to. It's not, mechanical guys aren't necessarily geared towards body stuff all the time. And I've seen people have better experience at body shops, because what you have to think about is, let's say the car got hit in the front and now the driver's door doesn't open, but there's no physical damage. A body shop is geared towards removing body components without damaging them, hopefully. And they might have a better understanding and a better recall. They've taken more doors and door panels apart than most mechanics, and they're going to be able to get that door open without damaging it, if that makes sense. So I would actually try and talk to your local body shop and see if somebody's got the ability to open that without taking it apart. It kind of saves you some labor instead of having to take the seat, the door panel, etc. off. It's a little bit of a quicker and easier method of doing it. So, sometimes they can go down from the inside with the jimmy tools, the door jam jimmy tools, as we call them, and, disable the latch or the mechanism that way. All right? Try that. See if that works, either one of those two, and give us a call back next week. Let us know how that works out for you. I'm sorry the clock's going to take me. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.